I think we are ready to go, and we start this morning with primary financial statements. I give the floor to Aida.
Thank you, Hans. Good morning. We are very excited to bring this topic to you. This is the first time we are discussing not primary financial statements, but first time we're discussing primary financial statements and application to financial entities with the board. We have discussed this topic with some of our advisory bodies, including ASAF and CMAC, and we have included feedback we have received from them in the cover note, which is Agenda Paper 21. Today we would like to achieve three things in our discussion. One is review the research, which is preliminary research we as a staff have done so far on the topic, which is laid out in Agenda Paper 21B. And then we would also like to discuss two more things. One is our preliminary analysis of which of the board's tentative decisions for non-financial entities could apply to financial entities with little or no adjustments. And then the second thing we would like to discuss is in those areas where the staff has assessed that the proposals for non-financial entities could not apply without a more significant adjustment to financial entities, we would like to consider possible alternative approaches that we could consider to dealing with those areas. Now, we are not asking the board to make any decisions in any of these areas, but we have four questions for you in Agenda Paper 21A, which are really intended to help us staff when we go out to do further research and analysis in these areas. So, I mean, application of the whole project to a quite big group of entities, what we call financial entities, is a very big, it's a wide topic. And there are a number of ways we as a staff could have approached to discuss this with the board. So we thought it's actually helpful to first go through and lay out our approach to even approach to approaching this topic, so to speak, which we have done in the cover paper. So I'm just going to lay out what our thoughts were on the approach and ask for comments on the approach itself before we start even any of the discussion. So this approach I'm talking about is in paragraph 5 of the cover note. And we thought, okay, it's good to have phases because it's not realistic really to try to talk about all topics simultaneously. There's lots of interrelationships between topics we need to consider and so on. So we thought the phase one, which is really the papers we have prepared for this meeting, is about preliminary analysis, preliminary identification of project areas where we could apply tentative decisions for non-financial entities to all entities, and preliminary identification of the possible approaches in those areas where we can't. And this is the phase we were hoping to discuss and essentially complete today. The phase, as I said, there is no tentative decisions from the board. It is all preliminary analysis in preparation for the next two phases. What we thought we'd do as a next step, next phase of this part of the project is really consider what is the priority area, what is the first thing, most important thing we need to address in relation to financial entities, and then consider the alternatives in that area or areas and decide or, you know, ask the board to decide on what they think is the most useful approach there. And then once we have that decision, then we would go back and basically look at the entire model of all project areas in the context of financial entities and, you know, assess interrelationships and ask the board to make remaining decision in that context. So with that, we were hoping to conclude our analysis of and recommendations for application of the project to financial entities. So before we go on to discuss actual papers, I'm just going to pause here to ask if you have any comments or questions on our proposed approach in this area.
I had a question on the population we're talking about, so the scope. Is it an appropriate time to ask that now?
Sure.
Yeah. So in paper 21, I saw in paragraph 4 you talked about different types of financial entities, and I saw that investment property companies are listed there.
Yeah.
So And when I'd been thinking about financial entities previously, when we've been having the discussions about the appropriateness of EBIT and things, I've been thinking more banks and insurance companies. So when we're talking about next steps and things, are we thinking about banks and insurance companies, or are we thinking also about investment property companies? Because I think that the types of issues might be quite different.
And I mean, that's a great question, and we also discuss it as a team, which is why we use this broad term financial entities, and we put investment property companies there, because even though there is, you know, the similarity between them and the banks, there's also similarity in the sense that some of the proposals that we have for non-financial entities would not necessarily result in useful information for them too. And it was interesting to see how their treatment changes, because what we said, okay, let's use this industry classification that are used widely and help us decide what are we considering. And we actually noticed that the different industry classifications classify real estate companies differently. Some actually put them in the finance sector, some not. Some have recently moved them, so it kind of indicates there's some fluidity. But we think we need to consider them, because we had a meeting with some of them initially, and our initial analysis suggests that they have some of the similar issues, although perhaps not all of the issues that you would find when you look at applying proposals to banks.
So maybe we just need to be careful if we comments we're making things we think are relevant for, say, a bank, but not for an investment company, to make that point when we're making observations along the way.
Yeah, I mean, bear in mind, in these papers, we haven't really, we have made comments, and, you know, Carl and Schulte ran us through the research we have done, but we haven't really done focused analysis of each type of, say, financial entities and how they differ. I mean, this is all very preliminary, so all the feedback you give us today is really going to be helpful so that we can focus our work moving forward.
Are investment property companies, are they generally seen as financial entities?
Well, this goes to my point. Let's look at the industry classification. Maybe that will help us tell us. And actually, in some of these classifications, they are, you know, we have a finance, they will start with sector, and there's a finance sector, and this will be listed under, and other classifications will put real estate as a separate sector. So,
I wonder if it's not just better to talk about financial entities and investment property companies, just to be more precise.
We've used it as an umbrella term, and perhaps that's not the best way of doing it. I think all we wanted to do was acknowledge that some of the decisions that we've made don't work very well for investment property.
That I can understand, I don't think you should call them.
Because if we talk about net interest margin, which I suspect is going to come up a lot, I can't really see that would be too relevant for investment property companies, unless I'm thinking about the wrong type of company, but I would have thought it was more fair value changes and things. But
Yeah, they have a similar term, but they call it different net rental yield. So, yes, you're right. Okay, so any more questions?
I think it's fair that we think about perhaps non-financial entities, but does it mean those which we classify financials, whether it has investment property companies in there or not, are a homogeneous group? I think we've got some discrete sectors in there, and there may be different solutions for different types of companies within there.
Thanks. On the same topic. I think it's we have to be very clear when we talk about what we talk about financial entities. My mind can be financial intermediaries. It's a little bit distinct from financial entities. Can be financial institutions, even broader. So I think it's necessary. But just I think we are in the right route on this. Just to stress, just as a matter of curiosity, to have an idea why is that so important, I went to check the Forbes Global 2000 list that was released on 6th of June 2018. And I just looked at the 20th first ones. Out of the 20, 10 are financial institutions, 10 of the largest group in the world. Consider the matrix that Forbes do use that includes sales, profit, asset, and market value. And so, and the three first ones, they are financial institutions: ICBC, China Construction Bank, and JP Morgan Chase. And there are a number of. So out of 20, 10 are financial intermediaries of financial institutions. When I go to the market cap, and then what's the other side? The largest ones are in the technology sector, Apple, Microsoft, Amazon, Alphabet, and Facebook. Mm-hmm. So it's still very important for us. That's why this discussion is key, to really have an idea of what is best works best for financial intermediaries or financial institutions.
Anne?
I agree that we focus our comments today on the financial institutions and leave the investment companies, because we've also got the conglomerates, and I think we'll have some different comments around conglomerates. So I think it will be helpful if we focus on financial institutions. All the academic work would put financial institutions separate from the real estate companies. So that means most of the industrial classifications that the academics are using would separate out real estate sector into their own sector.
So are you suggesting we actually, you know, we because our original thoughts would be these three phases, to basically consider them all in one go in each phase. Are you, am I hearing that you're suggesting we actually focus on a narrow subset of financial entities, which is financial institutions, and work through the phases for them, and then go back and consider conglomerates?
I think, unless I'm putting words in your mouth, Anna, I think it's more that we have to think about these entities separately because they face different challenges. So it doesn't necessarily mean that we have to do one and then go to the other. We can do them all together, but there are separate considerations for each type of
entity. And as we talk today, we need to know what we're talking about. So if we say we're talking about financial institutions in the first case, then our comments will be more focused.
Thank you. I'm not sure we should treat financial institutions quite differently from non-financial institutions. I have two reasons. One reason is some investors are doing the industry sector investment, and they have to compare different industry sectors. So some investors compare non-financial and financial. So therefore, if we have completely different format of performance, then they cannot compare it. And the other thing is difficulty of definition of financial institutions. Mm-hmm. And recently, there are more companies who have a subsidiary of financial institutions, financial services, and the conglomerate type of business is increasing. So it's not really the size of the business. Even a smaller company has a small financial services within their groups. So therefore, in the future, I think this type of company will increase, given that there is an environment of internet technology. So therefore, if we try to challenge financial institutions, anyway, we will face the difficulty of defining financial institutions. So therefore, I'm not quite happy with defining financial institutions and treat it completely different. So I think our approach should be to tackle the conglomerate type financial statement first before we try to define what's the financial institution. I think we're not talking about the next paper, really.
Could be. Yeah, thank you.
It's my fault a little bit, but I just wanted to make sure that when we're talking, if people are making comments that only apply to financial like banks, I don't know what term to even use anymore, that we're specific about that as opposed to a broader category. And to Anne's point, which I think is a good one, I think it will partly depend on whether we decide we just want to focus on non-financials and then not really do anything with the others, or whether we then want to do something with the others, and then if we do, whether we need more specificity. But I think that's we haven't got to that point
yet. Yeah, yeah. Thank you.
Daryl? I think I may have been heading down the same point. I think we might be overcomplicating it by talking too much about scope now and peeking ahead to paper 21A. I think with the conclusions we reach there might be more about the nature of the earnings rather than the industry in which a company exists. So I think scope is probably not good now until we've actually decided then. We should then circle back.
Well, my point on this subject is that I think if we want to move this project forward, we need to consider more globally first how to handle companies, whatever they are, that wouldn't fit naturally in the decisions that we have made so far. So the approach that the staff proposes to look the decisions that can apply generally and to separate out the decisions that can't, I think is extremely helpful. We have also a stream of work on potential templates, and that may be the time when we look at how eventually dealing with the different types of companies separately. If we start, I think, to concentrate on one particular type, we are going to leave anyway a whole series of issues on the way that will block our progress in the project. So to me, we should go from the less specific to the more specific chronologically and not the reverse. Otherwise, we're going to have a very messy project.
Okay.
Okay. So given that we started with discussion, what are these companies, how are they similar, how are they different, we thought actually might be helpful to start with Agenda Paper 21B first. And, you know, this paper, this is a set of slides that Caroline has worked very hard on researching and preparing. We still label it as our preliminary research. As, you know, Amaro said, these companies are very big, very significant. There are many of them, so we only scraped the surface so far. But nevertheless, we thought it would be useful to present you with findings of our research, and the objective of our this preliminary research being to just have assessments of common reporting practices for a small selection of financial entities. So with that, I'll hand over to Caroline to run us through the slides.
Agenda Paper 21B presents some of our preliminary findings for three types of financial entities, as you can see on slide 3. So entities with financial and non-financial activities, or we can call them conglomerates, banks and investment property companies. And I would like to highlight a few of our findings, starting on slide 4. So first of all, we've looked at entities with both financial and non-financial activities. For example, we've looked at some car manufacturers that provide financing to their customers, and we've looked at some supermarkets that have a banking subsidiary. And what we found in terms of the key performance measures that they use is that many of the entities in our sample used net profit and adjusted net profit as key performance measures. But they also used EBIT-type measures, both at the segment level and the consolidated level. And those EBIT-type measures included, in most cases, the interest income and the interest expense from the financial activities. We've also seen that such entities use a number of different formats for the statement of financial performance. And we've included some examples of those formats on slides 5 through 8. So on slide 5, you can see an example of a company that does not present its financial activities separately on the face. It only identifies them separately in the segment reporting, in the notes. Then slide 6 presents an example of a company that presents information by segment on the face of the statement of financial performance, by using additional columns.
Caroline, I'm a bit slow, but in example 5, slide 5, yes. So this company includes interest earned and expensed in terms of its financing activities in its operating income, basically.
Yes.
So it does not exclude it for EBIT.
Yes.
Which makes sense, I suppose.
Except they include their revenue.
I assume this is a conglomerate. Yeah.
The left side is on the right side is the note. On the left side is the statement of
yeah. Financial. So they include the interest
it includes
in the revenue.
Yes.
That makes sense. Yeah.
But then on the left side,
not if you're applying IFRS 15. But
the thing is that
Bing.
Can I just clarify then? Because this company has both revenue and cost of sales at the top, and then at the bottom, finance income and finance expenses. So I assume what it's doing is the top is its normal activities, interest from its normal activities, and the bottom is its investments and or
borrowings, are they allowed to do that?
Yes.
So it's a conglomerate that's got a bit of both types of business and it's trying to accommodate both in the same.
Yes, and what we also typically see on slide 5, so the financial services segment, you can see on the lines finance income and finance expenses, they would have zero or very small amounts in those bottom line items for that segment. Can I move on and talk about the example on slide 7? So that's an example of a company that presents its financial and non-financial activities in two separate sections, one below the other, in the statement of financial performance. And then slide 8 presents an example of reporting practice that we've seen among some companies that report under US GAAP, which is to present a separate revenue and a separate expense line item for financial activities. Then moving on to the banks on slide 9, we've seen that the banks in our sample used various key performance measures, including net interest income, operating profit, net profit, and adjusted operating profit and adjusted net profit. However, we found no evidence of them using an EBIT-type measure. In the sample, we've seen that some line items and subtotals are presented by many of the banks, for example, interest income and interest expense and net interest income. But we've also seen that those line items and subtotals may not always be defined consistently by all entities. And then we've also seen some variability in the presentation of other line items and subtotals. And slide 12 presents an example, or presents two examples of entities that we've looked at, and highlights some of the differences between the line items and subtotals that they choose to present. And then finally, the real estate companies on slide 14, we've got an example of an entity's statement of financial performance. And what we've seen in our sample is that many entities present an EBIT-type operating profit in their statement of financial performance, as is shown in the example on the slide. But what we've also noticed is that the entities in our sample don't seem to use that EBIT-type measure as a key performance measure outside of their financial statements. So instead, they would use an adjusted net profit measure that's adjusted for the fair value changes in their investment properties and some other adjustments. So this paper doesn't include any specific questions for the board, but we would welcome any comments on our preliminary findings as well as suggestions on how we should proceed with our research.
Bonsoir.
I think it's a very good sample that you've brought to us, and it helps guide our thinking. My observation on this would be that basically when we look at the various examples, and I leave the conglomerate issue aside for a while in the way they may want to separate out on the face of the primary statement and the different activities, leaving that aside, I think what we see is that whether it's net rental income, whether it's net interest income, all this is just nothing more or less than gross profit. Different names that are specific to certain activities, more descriptive of certain activities, but basically are gross profit lines. So we have already decided that we have a gross profit subtotal that would be an IFRS specified or subtotal. So this, and we have also the fact that there is a free labeling. My other observation is that the decision that we've made in the structure of the income statement so far, in fact, are of two elements. In terms of defining subtotal, the highest line that we have is the business profit from consolidated entities. In other words, we have not brought any form of comparability decision above for any company. The other area that we have worked on is the disaggregation issue and the function and expense, and that applies above. But in what we have done so far, we have not worked with the comparability objective in mind. We have worked in with the greater transparency, a greater insight objective in mind. So the thing that I find awkward at this stage is if we were sliding into wanting to have a specific format, for example, for banks, and we would get into eventually, if we wanted to do more than what is already available, that would mean that we would start defining line items, defining content of subtotals. We have not on the agenda, and we have not made the decision to define the content of cost of sales, of cost of goods sold. We have not that on our agenda. Why would we stop this or stall this project into wanting to define something more precise, more prescriptive for banks at this juncture? I'm not saying that it's not a project that could have merits. I'm saying that to me it's odd to start having this type of eventually possible development within this project. I think it has the... It's a good objective to have, but I think it does not believe this is to this project, and I think it's going to stall this project if we get into this path.
But where I take exception to what you just said is that I think when we define the subtotals like EBIT and operating profit, business profit, we do that with comparability in mind. Huh?
And that's
why but you said we don't, but I think we do.
Now, I say we have not sought comparability above business profit.
But the subtotals that we have defined are there,
yes,
to provide more structure and comparability.
And when I said earlier that I think it would be good to look globally first, what is in fact suggested in the other paper, at what do we do? How do we handle those companies? And it's good that there is a variety of them, so you can't start defining everything. What do we do when we have companies for which a number of subtotals that we have defined would not be relevant? I think that's the question that we need to answer if we want to make progress.
Before I forget, Hal, during our joint meeting with the FSB, he made an interesting comment, which he stated that I think the banks alone were 50% of total revenue or profits in the SP 500. So they are very dominant in the public markets. Do we find the same in the world of IFRS? We probably haven't looked at this, but...
Well, Amaro has done some.
That would be worthwhile. We have to know what we are doing. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, part of the research, we have a long to-do list, Karin and I, of all the things we want to look at, and we're just getting to them as we can. But part of that is, and actually Lydia is working on this as we speak, is just to look at this kind of what we call loosely financial entities and basically analyze all the IFRS preparers that would fit into that and kind of just to get a better grasp what is the scope.
Yeah. I think we really need to do that.
Yeah,
that's good.
So that's one of the things. Yeah.
All right. Nick?
Thank you. I think the presentation clearly illustrates that these type of companies do present their results in a very different manner to commercial and industrial companies. That is the reality. So while I agree with tax comments that investors have to make decisions between financial and non-financial stocks as they allocate capital, they don't go about it in the same way. And the sense of trying to shoehorn all of these into one template just doesn't reflect the commercial reality. So if I'm there as an investor, I will have a template which I've devised for industrial stocks. I'll have another template for banks. Yeah. My banks won't fit into my industrial stocks template. Same for insurance, same for investment property companies. That is the reality. if I'm doing screening, and we've talked about the importance of screening, I'd probably run a screen for a universe based on, let's say, MSCI X financials. I'd then screen for banks separately. I can't screen in the same. I have different metrics for financials and non-financials. And I think the sense of trying to shoehorn these all into the same model won't help users. It will do the opposite, I think. So we have to reflect these are different. And in some respects, I agree with Francois, I don't want to stall this project for that. And we can handle that in a number of different ways. But equally, I'm not sure it is as simple as taking what we've done already and just saying, actually, we can fit this in for financials here, here, and here. I think they are fundamentally different.
What do you think?
Gary?
Thank you. And, couple of comments, and actually Francois said a lot of what I was going to say, and it's worth repeating. Net interest income is the equivalent of gross profit. And I think I'm absolutely convinced that these examples, other work we've done, is interest income, interest expense from normal operating activities belongs up top. That is not in the financing section. That's what banks do, or finance companies do, and so on. That is their revenue. I mean, the fact that it's called interest doesn't mean it's not revenue. And likewise, now I know in the, in the dynamic risk management, I asked the staff offline, what would be the difference in your modeling if you had a 10-year certificate of deposit, which is deposit, sounds like ordinary activities, versus a 10-year term loan? So there's really nothing, from that point of view. So there might be a debate over where do you cross the line between the deposits that are ordinary activities versus deposits that are more akin to long-term financing. Still, I think the risk of repeating, I think ordinary activities belongs up top above EBITDA and up in operations and so on. I think for the entities that are in scope, I think industrial and commercial companies that finance their goods and services might have very large financing subsidiaries. You mentioned the autos earlier, which they certainly do. I think that's part of industrial and commercial activities. I don't per se think of this financial services. It is in one sense, but it really is there to support their commercial operations, opposed to a separate line of business. And I think, as we're talking here, I went through a couple of entities that have got banks, some of the retail stores that do, and the one I'm looking at right here, the banking activities are about 10% of total footings of assets, so you'd say it's not the predominant thing. So back to your, I guess it'd be on slide 4, but entities that have both non-financial and with banking activities, really start wondering how big is the true universe that we're talking about here. I mean, major money center banks and even large regional banks tend not to be subsidiaries of industrial companies. They might have niche subsidiaries as part of diversification. So we probably could use some research in the stratification of just how big is this market that we're talking about. Again, the retail company I'm looking at here, the banking activity is 10% of total assets. Not particularly big, you might say. And they fit it in a commercial financial statement format. That wouldn't necessarily be true for everybody as they got bigger, but I think we need...
But in that case, what do you do with those still 10% of earnings?
It's up in...
That's clearly don't fit in there.
No, it just inside, looks like just to be inside revenue and cost of sales. I'm just looking at the primaries, not going back further into the notes. And that's how they defined it. But banking, although it was a banking subsidiary by name, it wasn't predominant. It was, like I say, 10% of total assets. But you wonder where you're going to get an industrial company where the banking operations are 80% of total assets. So I think we need a little bit of stratification of banking operations vis-a-vis conglomerates or other companies. I'm just wondering just how big of a universe of a problem are we really talking about here.
So your inkling is that most conglomerates we can still fit into the commercial template.
Not perfectly.
Yeah.
And but I am inclined to agree with Nick. Is this really a one-size-fit-all problem? I don't think it is. I think there is multiple solutions to it. I think we need to make sure we don't confuse comparability with uniformity.
And this is, I mean, this is a great question. I think it's similar to what you asked us just a minute ago, Hans, about stratification in the universe. And especially with conglomerates, we didn't want to put it in the papers because we are still verifying. But our research finds that actually legally many jurisdictions forbid conglomerates from having significant banking operations. They limit the percentage. And UK actually being one of the few that permits, which would explain some of the things. So actually in conglomerate situation, most common financing activity is what is a typical capital finance operation.
Certainly credit cards and auto lending and stuff like that. And I think that should fit inside a standard commercial industrial type format. Again, I'm thinking ones where the majority of the operations happen to be financial service subsidiaries under the guise of an industrial company. And the other thing I think on banks, you know, we look at banks, a lot of their group result reports, and you see it, I think it's all over the world, is, yeah, they look different, they're long, but I think in terms, they're trying to make it look like they're regulatory call reports and have as few formats in their group as they can. So if your regulatory call report requires a certain look, feel, and line content, they're going to do their best to get their shareholder reporting in the same format. It just, it's a lot of work. I mean, as Martin said, these are 400-page reports. You don't want multiple iterations of them. And I think that would come into the cost-benefit analysis in time we would have to deal with.
Peter?
I just wanted to comment on this idea that net interest margin is like gross profit. I don't think that's really right. I mean, I think that's a by nature type. Net interest is more like a by nature. It's not a by function. And if you think about a big retail bank, the servicing costs are going to be a significant part of actually providing the services to customers. So I think you'd need to include all the operational costs. So I think a bank will naturally choose a by nature type presentation. And then you might have a problem with a conglomerate if the natural fit for the rest of the business is a bifunction presentation.
John Wu.
Thank you. I'd like to say thank you on this good survey of good examples. So there are many good messages from these analysis of many examples. As you said, you know, the financial and non-financial activities are separate by almost all. Conglomerates, that's very nice, and they are using the different concepts for the indicators of for the financial services. So the another thing I found interesting thing is that they are using our operating profit concept for financial activities. Based on the all examples, they are using operating profit or operating income. Every example they are using, it's using. And this is just a small clarification on slide 8. This is a common practice under US GAAP. It seems to me not clear. I guess selling, general, and administrative expenses are separate for financial and non-financial activities, right? But here, it's not clear, because you said the financial service expenses just include interest expenses. However, SG&A expenses is the sum of these are all services, or?
Sure. I can have a look at it and get back to you offline.
I can give a perspective on it, Chungo, in having had been a conglomerate in the U.S., the SG&A is a percent of relevant sales, in the case of sales price, isn't it? The overhead, that's basically viewed as the overhead rate. That is a widely followed metric.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're selling tangible products in there, the overhead SG&A in this case is an extensively followed and analyzed thing in terms of, you know, how bloated are you, operational efficiency, and so on. So I can absolutely see why they would separate those two types of cost lines.
Mm-hmm.
Likewise, financial services expenses versus financial service revenue. If you were an insurance company, you start looking at the combined ratio, the expense ratio comes into another widely followed metric. So it makes sense to me, you know, if these numbers otherwise but individually material.
So there, this is SG&A expenses, that's separated for each.
Yeah, well, in this case, they did separate it because SG&A, I would bet.
Yeah, what I'm saying is for the financial expenses, financial service expenses, that just includes the interest expenses here.
Well, it probably includes all the back office and other overheads as well. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think it's just it's almost like a segmented approach on the face of the P&L.
But they don't think this is an important item for their financial services, so they are just into the summing up of every.
Yeah, correct.
Martin. Thank you. I really think for these conglomerates, I think we're trying to make financial statements and especially the P&L comparable between, I think. But if there is a big part of financial activities in conglomerates, we should not include it in gross profit or whatever, because that, I think, is then counterintuitive what we want to achieve, because we will make things comparable which are not comparable and then are misleading, because to have interest income and interest expense in revenues over cost of sales, I think, for me, is totally misleading. Mm-hmm. Also to say that kind of net interest margin is like gross profit is also not true, because my banks also are different, because maybe a retail bank, you can say gross net interest margin is like gross profit, but for a big investment bank or for a big bank who does different activities, when in the net interest margin also there is not kind of comparable where do you allocate your funding cost for trading activities. If you have big interest income expenses for funding the trading activities, you have trading income but you have then interest expense, then the interest expense is in the net interest margin, so it is also not comparable. And therefore I would say, okay, we should not really come to a conclusion and say, okay, that is all comparable, because it is really not comparable. Even banks are not, the net interest margin is not comparable between banks. And some banks have a kind of big investment asset management arm, which they have commission income, commission expense, which is also a big part of their operating income. So I think these conclusions, based on this analysis, are good to say, okay, it's diverse, but why is it diverse? Because all the banks are diverse and conglomerates are diverse. And to compare, for example, then if we include net interest margin, for example, in gross profit, and if we compare this company with a company which has not a big part of finance income, we compare things which are not comparable, because clearly the net interest margin is based on the interest environment currently, and maybe not based on, okay, can you sell your goods to a high margin or not. And therefore, I think we should not forget what is our objective of this project, to make companies comparable, but it should make sense to compare them. If it does not make sense, what Nick has said, and that is the reason that I have learned also, that analysts have different templates for different kind of industries. And we cannot compare all kind of industries in one template and say, okay, then this company has a cross margin of X and that also is a better company. Totally different industry.
Daryl? More of a statement perhaps than a question, but am I correct in saying, so maybe I'm asking, that reading your paragraph 12, your slide 12, where you talk about the bank examples, that these are pretty prevalent ways of presenting a bank income statement?
I must emphasize that our sample was very small, and these are two examples of actual companies that we've found.
The comment I was going to make, which I realized earlier on, you talk about the fact that some countries, Brazil, I think, and France, have specific templates that they require. These two income statements are the ones certainly that I've most commonly seen. And what is interesting about them is that the one on the left-hand side follows almost exactly the order of required presentation and the income statement set by IS 30. The one on the right-hand side is essentially the same IS 30 requirement, but just amended for the fact that many banks see impairment losses as a critical part of interest margin. And the only really important takeaway from that is it does seem like companies will follow a template if there's something out there in many circumstances.
Sue?
So I think that the analysis certainly shows that the focus on EBIT, which has sort of been our driving force for the rest of for non-financials, is not really relevant in terms of what how banks present themselves and presumably what investors are interested in, if you assume that they are responding to investor requests. But that isn't all that we've been focusing on. We've been focusing on trying to make sure we can assist users in making valid comparisons and also focusing on things like, well, sort of indirectly, even though we haven't defined it, we've come up with something which by reverse engineering, if you like, is an operating type metric. And I think the key difference we've got between the banks and other companies is that the way they think about financing is different because it's so integral to the operations. So they've sort of put that up the top, whereas for other companies it's down the bottom. But the investing concepts, I think, in theory, could be still relevant, for example, to these guys as much as it is to corporate. So I guess one thing is I don't think we should say nothing we've done is relevant for financial institutions if that's the route that we go down. And I think for me the challenge that we have with the banks is that when you look at these numbers, it's actually hard to know how much similarity or difference there might be on some of these questions between what we've decided for corporates and what they're doing. Because, for example, you can't tell from these extracts, nor I think from financial statements, based on what I understand, whether you know, if they've got liquidity portfolios, you know, big bond portfolios that they hold for regulatory purposes, you can't tell whether the interest on that has been put up in the interest income line item along with the loan interest or whether it's down in the investment bit. And you can't tell, you know, what's happening with... You just don't know what's where in the banks, and that's the main frustration I hear from investors. There's a real comparability problem because, as Martin said, even the net interest margin, which is the main point of comparison, is not comparable between entities because there's a lot of lack of transparency in terms of what's where. So I guess at a minimum what might be useful to think about for the banks is firstly working out whether there's pieces like the investment that might still be relevant to them so we could have at least some consistency. But, for example, I'm not sure whether all banks put interest expense on every single instrument they issue in the interest expense line. So, for example, if they've got regulatory capital type instruments that are interest expense for accounting, do they always put it up in net interest margin? I don't know. So I think we've got a major issue with disaggregation in the banking industry, which, you know, even if we address that, we might be able to assist with comparability.
Yeah, I mean, this was one of the big messages that came from our meeting with CMAC. And it's kind of on the face of it, oh, everybody has this net interest margin, but when you start digging deeper, you see a wide variety, and to your point, you actually can't figure out in some cases where which assets and liabilities is it coming from.
Yeah. And I think you mentioned in one of your papers that the point that CMAC made was that they'd like to be able to know where the income, interest income and expense that's in P&L is, what numbers link up to the different categories on the balance sheet, and at the moment you can't actually do that. So we went one little step with IFRS 9 when we've said that there has to be a separate line item in P&L, which is the interest on financial assets measured at amortised cost and fair value through OCI. So that's one step forward, but only one step forward. And when we did that, when we had that discussion on that and we had a call with the French banking representatives, they really encouraged us to try and make some improvements in terms of what is presented on interest because of some of these frustrations.
So the solution for an approach for banks might be to simply...
Some more disaggregation so that we can...
Better disaggregation and without trying to find too many items. Subtotals.
Yeah. Yeah. I think if we want to improve comparability, that would at least help a bit for that industry.
Anne?
I think the examples are very helpful, as everyone said. And you mentioned you're going to do more research. So as you're doing that, just tell us how many. When you say there's only a small number, just tell us you looked at six or eight or however many. And also I think it'll help us if you actually keep a record of what countries they came from, because we're already talking about templates that exist. So I think that's part of us looking at these examples, which are really helpful. And I do think about these conglomerates. Martin's pointed out how the consolidated line... A consolidated column in slide 6 is quite meaningless for an analyst. So I'm assuming thinking about what Nick's saying, that the analysts get down and they need to see this financial services segment, which has a format that's quite different from segment A, which we assume we're an operating segment. So I think that's a point we need to hold quite central, that we know that information users need these financial services, their information one way, and the industrial segment, if we want to call it that, another way. The conglomerates are putting it all together, and it must be extremely difficult to understand, hence the importance of segments for the conglomerates. But for our work, you know, whichever way we get, wherever we arrive at, we know that there'll be presentation differences, and we're actually aiming to get that, to get presentation differences, not to make them all the same.
Just to echo a couple of things, I think, hopefully I won't misquote anybody, I think Francoise is right, we should work from the general to the particular, if I got that right, and learn as we go, because it was what people are saying is there's a lot of complexity. I think the staff have an excellent idea, though, of identifying places, the things that look like they can flow straight through, and noting those sounds like a really good idea, the ones we identify. The ones that are problems, you know, even what Martin said, but if you mix two very different kinds of products, it's not comparable. If one company has product A and one company has product A and B and the gross profits are radically different, you still have a comparability problem. Comes back, I think, to what Anne said. You know, really good segment reporting sounds to me like part of the answer, and that's off the table.
Sorry, what, man?
Off the table.
That's off the table.
What is off the table?
Segment.
Really good segment report. What this says is if you really want comparability, you have to compare likes.
Stopping people doing good segment reporting if they want to.
No, but if you look at the financial statements of banks, and which the staff have done, and other financial institutions, to their own devices, they tend to do very diverse. And in fact, I'd kind of disagree a little bit with Sue, is that they're responding to users, unless each bank is responding to a specific set of users, and they have kinds of very specific markets of users because they have very different statements. So does the one bank respond to one set of users and another bank to another set? Because you go and look at two banks, pretty radical, different way of presenting. There are some things. So I'm back to kind of what Francois said. I think just systematically moving forward and with kind of the staff identifying what's applicable and then figuring out how we want to address it as we go is probably, I think, the best that we can do with this at this time. I think it's a reason, what path do we follow? I think this discussion's really good, though, in getting all this evidence. And what Anne said, like, build the evidence and keep it, because at the end we're going to have to make some choices about to do what conglomerates and financial institutions. And even with banks, you've got banks with, you know, different classes of product. Some just do straight banking, some do major investment, some do, you know, et cetera. So,
yeah. Mary?
Very helpful to have these examples and actually to have a few rather than tons in terms of what it demonstrates. And it made me realize, you know, my suggestion is, I have a more specific suggestion that I'll bring up when we talk about the next paper, but my suggestion in terms of thinking about how we approach financial institutions or thinking about entities for whom are examples our work so far, you know, doesn't really fit, is I think we have to think about whether we are going to approach adapting based on finding comparable items or whether it's based on the nature, you know, the intrinsic nature of items. And I think they're within either of those, we can then decide how far, how detailed we want to be for the ones that don't fit the work that we've done so far. But what I mean by comparable versus nature slash, I'll say, it's bad to say nature slash function in the setting, but is what, you know, what we see in slide 5, and I'll editorialize slightly about it, is an entity saying, I'm going to think about almost maybe my business model and say, I think I have financial services, and for financial services, interest income is the equivalent of revenue for a company that sells goods and services, and therefore when I consolidate, I'm going to add them together. And what I mean by comparable is they are thinking that if I, you know, what's the comparable? It isn't, Martin warned us that gross profit is not the same as net interest income, that those are two different measures of performance, but an entity might think of it's the approximate comparable in terms of where you try and measure, you know, first measure of performance. And this is a company that said, okay, we want to put it all into one format, and so we're going to sum them up. Now, the editorializing I'll do, Sue talked about the changes brought in with IFRS 9. I'll talk about the changes that are brought in with IFRS 15 that say in terms of disclosure that you've got to disclose separately revenue from contracts with customers, which the entity shall disclose separately from other sources of revenue. So, you know, when we look at somebody applying IFRS 15, I think the ability to just add it into a single line item will be a bit more in focus. But, you know, that's one way of approaching it. Another is an entity like the entity illustrated on slide 8, which said, I'm going to separate out more by function. I'm going to separate out more by nature, where this entity says, I have sales of products, and then they have financial services revenue. Now, I'm not sure, and I don't actually need to know, for this specific company, whether we'd agree that revenue is the appropriate characterization of income from the financial services activity, because I'm reminded of some of the discussions we had in the insurance project about how it's inappropriate to gross up revenue for the receipt of deposits and including deposits in the outflow. So when I look at financial services revenue, I'd question whether that's a revenue line item or whether they're really saying top line from financial services activities. I don't need the answer to it, but that's, some of the challenges when you try and put it in all in one format. And if you look at the third example on slide 12, here's an entity that the one on the left column to me feels a lot like the example P&L that we've been looking at for commercial entities, except for the fact that they're basically saying we don't have revenue, what you called in the template business profit. We don't have revenue from sales of goods and services because they have separately their financing results, which are on top, and then they have, next up is what I think of as more as investment income. So the investing section, follows after that. And so this is an entity that is presenting their P&L by, the nature of activities. And I think that what we have to think about from the work that we've done so far for non-financial institutions is if you're taking that and trying to translate it into broad spectrum financial institutions world, are we going to say the objective is to find the sector specific equivalent of this, and the sector equivalent is specific equivalent of this, or are we going to say the nature stays the same, it's just when you move from a commercial to a financial sector, something that we have thought of as secondary or tertiary for a commercial company, like investing activities, becomes the primary thing. It has to move up the line item. And, Martin's already raised the point about, the expenses associated with it, including the compensation costs for employees, et cetera, maybe become associated with those other activities. So my suggestion for how we approach moving from commercial entities to financial institutions is to think about whether we want entities to come up with sector-specific equivalents for what we've identified in the commercial entities, or whether we want them to flow through the nature of the activities, you know, investing, financing, commercial, and then think about how you adapt the presentation while keeping the nature shown. And we have, you know, the research you've done shows a range of responses to doing that. You know, I think further complicated by what I might call some applying a business model, I'm guessing, type activity in the conglomerates, in the conglomerates area, because they, you know, it's back to Gary's example, his view that if the financing activities are there to, in essence, support the sales of goods or services that, you know, that generating their revenue, I think Gary's thinking that it's appropriate to integrate those financing activities because their business model is to, you know, is to, sorry, I'm putting a few words in your mouth, but is to support the sales of goods or services. And I think that's the other thing we'll have to think about. Now, within either of those approaches, I think we'd still have to pick up Sue's comments about disaggregation and relationship of P&L line items to assets and liabilities on the statement of financial position. But I think we can make that decision within
disaggregation.
Yeah, within the approach we take. But I don't want an answer from the staff today, but I think we have to think about which of those two routes we're going to go, because it gives very different analysis. And to Francoise's concern about trying to go too far in financial institutions would bog down and delay the delivery of the work that we've done to date. I think within either of those approaches, we could decide how far down, you know, we go in specifying and building out that model. But I think we have to be clear about which direction we think you should be taking, because that at least sets the framework.
But can I ask you a question now? Sorry, question before the poor staff. But so I agree with you that if you look at the, particularly that slide 5 or whatever it was, and to some extent some of the stuff on slide 12, the similarity between what we've been working on and what seems to be presented is this notion of a profit from your operations, if you like. There's this sort of operating concept, and that's a different concept for the corporates versus, say, the banks. But if we think about that in the context of our project, don't you think that we've got a challenge in the sense that the way that we've got to operate, in the way that I think about it in the PFS project, is by working out what's financing and what's investing, where it seemed to tick a lot of boxes for stuff which the banks would consider to be operating, and by sort of default, we've got an operating outcome. Because the banks are funding, but they think of that as part of the operations, and they are investing in standalone things or whatever our words are, but they think of some of that at least as some of their operating,
right.
And so it's going to fail all of our...
Okay. So
because we've done it the opposite way round.
Although I think, and this is... thinking about it in the, you know, the last couple of weeks, and especially hearing this morning's discussion, we've got a bit of a bias in what we've said for the commercial entities that we're working so far, because we wanted to avoid labeling that top section operating, so we called it business profit.
It wasn't even just a label, though.
No. But if you think of that top section, and I agree with you about how we arrived at it, if you think of that top section as sales of goods and services, okay, just give provision of goods and services, and then reflect that we maybe had an implicit assumption that we didn't stop and articulate, which is since we assume that sales of goods and services was your primary activity, we then assumed that all the kind, what I'll call SG&A, the compensation, the occupancy, et cetera, costs kind of associated with that. But if you think of that top section, which I agree we defined almost as the residual, was because we tried to identify the nature of these other things, you know, of the investing activities and the nature of the financing. And we then just made an assumption about what SG&A is associated with. I think some of the thinking that we did around the nature of investing and the nature of financing still would hold? I mean, some of it comes to the disaggregation issues you raised in terms of, do you try and separate out this kind of financing expense versus that kind of financing expense? But it's, to me, it still comes down to their nature is financing expense. That doesn't mean that they automatically, if you're a financial institution, have to be the third chunk down. I just think we have to think about whether we want to approach it, you know, approach developing something for financial institutions or adapting what we have for financial institutions.
If I understand correctly, Mary, what you're talking about is effectively for banks taking what is our financing section and just moving it up wholesale to the top. Is that fair? It may be,
but I'm not trying to get that specific right now. All I was trying to say is we could either say EBIT is a subtotal that we have thought was very important to define, and we went through it this way, and EBIT is a key measure, you know, a comparable measure of performance for non-financial institutions. Now, we could approach financial institutions by saying, let's think about identifying what is the key measure of financial performance and knowing that that's going to be a comparable subtotal, and what do we have to say about what goes in it or what goes out of it? That, you know, that's a, what are the key aspects of our model and how can we develop the comparative ones for non-financial institutions? For, you know, that we have for non-financial institutions, how do we adapt them in a financial institution's world? Or we could say the primary thing is to drive through the nature of, you know, the three categories that we had, in which case we think about how might you expand or disaggregate that activity area if it is your predominant or significant activity. And I'm, at this point, I'm not arguing for either, but I think we just have to, I would hate for us to kind of do a mishmash of those two, mm-hmm. you know, a bit of let's see how we'd adapt it and a bit of the nature, I think, we have to think about the pros and cons of each approach and then say, this is the one we're starting with as our anchor, and this is how far we're going to go. And that way, even if we don't build out a complete financial institutions and different sectors within financial institutions, we'll know which way we're starting out. So that's my project structure suggestion, to think about whether we're trying to come up with comparables for the key structural aspects that we've found so far, or whether we're thinking about the three major categories of activities and how you present each of those activities if that is your predominant or secondary activity.
I think I understand what you're trying to say, and it helps me that we had a bit of discussion yesterday as well to help me think about it. And we as a staff, of course, will take the suggestions on board. We can consider this. I just want to emphasize that such approach would be quite a big departure of the approach taken with non-financial entities, where financing section is really how you fund the main operations. Investing section is all the activities investors will look separately from the main operations. And in a way, they are quite selective categories, because financing section is not presenting results from your financing activities. It's simply the funding expenses. Investing section, similarly, is not presenting results because it's kind of considered non-key. It's mainly the changes in those assets. If we take the approach that entities have sales of goods and services, investing activities, and financing activities, then you would basically end up having SG&A in each of the three categories. For example, and I struggle with that a little bit. I don't know
that you would or wouldn't, and I'm not trying to prejudge that. When I look at slide 12 and the bank on the left-hand side, you know, has approached this by saying, I'm going to think about the different streams of activity I have and separate interest income from fee income, okay? And then I look at, in contrast, the entity on slide 5, and it may have a bit to do with being, you know, conglomerate-ish versus financial institution, has said, I know what my key line items are, and I'm going to take all my activities and try and put them into the closest basic line item structure. And so I think that those are just two different philosophies for how you approach it. And I think we just have to think about, if I took a pure financial institution, whether I'm once again going to try and say, in the sector, am I going to try and decide what the sector-specific equivalent of EBIT is, what the sector-specific equivalent of financing activities is, what the sector-specific equivalent of investing or separating other things out is, or am I going to say we have approximately the right characterization of those activities, and I'm going to think about how I present those activities when they are the main rather than the supporting player in my activities.
Martin?
I think we have moved to the next paper because I think we're discussing all over the place here.
Yeah. Well, let's just continue.
Well, does the staff not want to
I'm losing forward. Because maybe discussing operating for banks, non-conglomerates, what disaggregation, so I'm really lost about this discussion.
Shall we then ask the staff to move on?
To get us back on track.
It's in chaos later.
So, 21A. So this paper is the phase one we described in the cover paper, which is really... There are two main chunks to it. One is the section, which is the first bit where we assess the project decisions that could apply with no or very little adjustments to to financial entities in the same way as for non-financial. And then the second bigger part of the paper is where we discuss and we have made certain assumptions, and I'm going to have to explain because I hear that there might be some disagreement with our preliminary analysis of the areas where the staff thinks the decisions would need to be altered and possible alternative approaches to do so. And I know the second part is far more interesting, and we have already kind of started discussing a little bit, but still I would like to start with the first part because, it would be good to hear if there is any disagreement with our analysis so we can go back and think about it. So the first part is discussing what are the project areas where we could actually say the principles we have developed as well as the detailed guidance could equally apply with potentially some adjustments to financial entities. And we have identified a number of areas that fall into this category. The first is proposals surrounding management performance measures. So just to remind us, the whole objective around proposals for management performance measures was to improve transparency and quality of alternative performance measures that entities currently present mostly outside financial statements. And, we have seen in Carlin's research that there are alternative performance measures used by financial entities as well. And as such, we thought actually equally useful objective to achieve for financial entities. So in principle, we thought, the proposals could apply. And the only but is same problem that we had with the gross profit for non-financial entities, where we said, well, actually, it's a commonly used measure. However, the way we have set out the requirements for management performance measure and related disclosures, which include disclosure of tax and non-controlling interest, providing these disclosures would not be useful for measures such as gross profit. And when we talk about financial entities, I recognize the debate to what extent is net interest margin, net rental yield comparable. But, the similar problem applies in that if we leave it alone completely and we know entities use it and they would therefore qualify under management performance measure, then that would become an issue of us requiring information that we know is not perhaps going to be useful to users. So that is one caveat, but of course we're going to discuss net interest margin and equivalent measures when we talk about subtotals and disaggregation as well potentially, so we think it's a solvable problem. I'm going to move through all the other areas and maybe pause then for discussion. So the next area we thought could equally well apply to all entities is the work we have done, well, Denise has done on principles of aggregation and disaggregation, where this is all in response to a demand for greater and better disaggregation. And in relation to financial entities and financial instruments, we have certainly heard calls that there is a need for better disaggregation. So we think as principles of developing guidance of how to aggregate, disaggregate, you know, what are characteristics to consider, we think it will be equally useful. We do recognize that this is still work in process as well as for non-financial entities, but we don't see why that work in process and further considerations couldn't equally apply to all entities. And disaggregation work or aggregation or disaggregation work, we always get confused which one to say first, also involves our consideration on guidance around nature versus function presentation on the face of the statement of financial performance. Now, with that, again, in principle, it could apply. I mean, we have seen from the slides that actually what many financial entities present today, with exception of conglomerates, perhaps, is looks more like by nature presentation, but there's nothing to stop them by applying the factors we have said entities shall consider to arrive at the same conclusion when making that distinction under new guidance. However, I need to caveat this area that it does depend, because I just want to emphasize that we are applying nature versus function guidance to everything that is above business profit subtotal for non-financial entities. Now, depending on how we go about the decisions for if to have subtotals and what subtotals to have for financial entities, then obviously that will have to lead into the to what extent, to which part of the P&L will this nature versus function apply. And then if you start getting things like, for example, if you say there shall be no subtotals for them, I'm not prejudging discussion, I'm just giving an example, then you will have to consider to what extent our guidance on nature versus function addresses things such as changes in fair value measurement, which would then fall into this category. So with said, in principle, also we think it could apply, but there are things to consider which will then we can only consider once we have seen what are we doing with the subtotals on the face. And then the final area, I'm not going to spend time discussing this, but it's, you know, our proposals around relabeling for other comprehensive income. Again, we see no reason why that should be any different for financial entities. So before I go on to other parts of the project where the staff has analyzed, we need to make amendments. I will stop here. I think we have a question one on page 12 of paper 21A, which is asking you for comments or questions on our analysis itself and also further suggestions for research if you think we need to do more research on any of these particular areas.
Before getting into that discussion, that part of the discussion, there is a reaction I would like to express on paragraph 4 of your paper that states that this paper does not apply to insurers. And I can't agree to that, and I would like this paper really to start from considering everybody. It's not to say that the work that has been done in IFRS 17 would be ignored, but it's just one example of where the definitions that we've used, the subtotals that we've defined, may not be relevant. So I think they have to be taken in and see how we can or can't define possible requirements that would preserve the relevance of what has been defined without being in contradiction with final requirements. But taking them out, I think, is a mistake.
And maybe just to clarify our thinking behind this, and you know, I would perhaps say we are not taking them out, but we have just, and this is why we put this caveat in paragraph 4, to signal our intention that we're actually not taking them out, but also to recognize the point that I think you have made over several discussions on other topics in the project, that intention of primary financial statements work is not to, you know, fiddle with underlying standards, so to speak. We had discussion about this in relation to some of the line items in other standards in relationships with those. And similar with insurance, I just wanted to give a message that to the extent that, you know, the IFRS 17 prescribes, which it does, for the case of financing activities, what is financing activities, that we didn't think it would be helpful to actually change that in any way, and it could be a relatively simple thing to say, you know, insurance contracts, you know, where it is defined in IFRS 17, what is financing, you simply put that in financing. Whereas, you know, big part of insurance activities is investing. Insurance standard does not talk about how you classify and where you classify investing. So that is an area we would need to review. And, you know, this is part of our, I mentioned at the beginning, we have this long to-do list of various avenues of research. And I have to admit that we are still to do and intend to do a comprehensive comparison of actually, if you were to completely disregard IFRS 17, would you actually get to a different answer even? Because I think in many cases you wouldn't, but there might be some differences. So we are still going to do this work. So we put this paragraph here to say we are not ignoring it, we are acknowledging it. This is our intention in principle, and, you know, we will carry on working just like we work in any other areas.
I think paragraph 4 is really important from a signalling perspective to me, because we've got insurance companies, we hope, busy implementing IFRS 17, spending money on systems changes, part of which I believe will be preparing for the required presentation, and we don't want them to think that there's a risk that the changes are in vain because we might come along and overturn those decisions.
That's why
I think a large part for the reason of this paragraph.
I certainly support that very much, but affirming that there won't be any change there is different from saying those companies are scoped out from what we do. We have to see how we define things, on what basis, so that the various captions that have been decided for IFRS 17 fall into appropriate subtotals. That's what we have to do. And because we have that to do, it's part of this paper. That's all my point.
And I hadn't read paragraph 4 the way you're reading it. So I don't think paragraph 4 was trying to scope insurance out of the project. It was simply saying that you had not yet thought about insurance in the context here, and that you would need to do that with IFRS 17 and, for that matter, any other specific standards that have specific presentation requirements.
That was our intention, though, yeah.
Okay, sorry for the disruption.
I mean, just to follow up, I think we've had a lot of feedback on the structure that we present within IFRS 17 from users already. And they're getting very used to that new structure. They relate to that new structure in a much more intuitive fashion. And I, again, would have some concerns that we put an element of doubt into people's minds.
I'm not about insurance, so I'm going to change the subject. Okay. And I support the staff approach to thinking about what we can take forward from the work we've done already as we move from non-financial to financial institutions in terms of going through the different kind of categories of decision and thinking about, would this decision apply equally? So, you know, right approach, and I think it's a good way of clearing some stuff off the table in terms of what we have to discuss. Of the first batch that prior to question one, the one where I disagree, or I'm not in agreement, I'm not sure I disagree, is the management performance measures, because I think your analysis that comes to the conclusion that net interest income as currently reported would be the kind of management KPI that would be a management performance measure equivalent requiring reconciliation, I think makes assumptions about what the line items are that meet the generic requirements of IS1. And I think it assumes that it would have to be reconciled to EBIT as we've defined it. And if you're looking at it as, you know, does it make sense to reconcile net interest income to EBIT? I agree that that's maybe not that helpful, but I think there are a lot of assumptions embedded in that chunk of the analysis. Some of the comments we had in the previous discussion highlighted how different entities might approach what they put into net interest income, and I'm not sure that all of them would require reconciliation. So I think the thinking we've done about alternative performance measures generally does have applicability to financial institutions, but we can't make a determination about the meaningfulness of the reconciliation requirement until we know what the anchors are for these entities that they'd be reconciling back to. So in terms of what you've summarized in question one, agree with the approach. The only piece of analysis and preliminary conclusion I disagree with is saying that what we've done for management performance measures is not applicable. I think there's thinking that would apply. We just may have to think about how we adapt it.
Can you just help me understand this, Mary? And so with gross profit, in previous discussions, we have said the reason we recommended to the board to not require but define this subtotal for non-financial entities was partly to alleviate this concern. And, you know, and that's held with it assumption that if we didn't do so, then gross profit would be an NPM. And I simply apply the same logic to net interest margin. So just help me understand why you think that wouldn't be the case, because I'm not quite sure. Well, so
I don't know if we're talking across purposes or not, but the way I read paragraph, the end of paragraph 24 and 25 is that that the staff concluded that the requirements for management performance measures would not produce useful information when applied to financial institutions.
No, I thought that I read it as saying that, like gross profit, we might need to think about listing net interest margin as one of the acknowledged subtotals, which would mean you wouldn't then need to do a reconciliation to it.
I had read it as this thinking is not applicable. So having clarified that that's what you were trying to say.
It's in the first part of the paper, so these are all things that we think are applicable.
Okay.
Just trying to move on a little bit, Martin.
And I agree that I think this management performance measure in principle we should apply to banks, but really not reconciliation to net interest margin, because I explained earlier. Secondly, disaggregation, and I'm really concerned if we really try to now say, okay, what is maybe negative fair value movements by nature or by function and commission income by nature and by function. And we can all do that, but this is a project which takes very, very long if you want to do that. And I don't know if you want to go in this direction. Certainly, other comprehensive income, I also agree we should apply the same rules, because I think banks are not different from other companies in this regard. So I agree mostly what you said, but really in banks, really disaggregation, and really you should maybe look at some banks, look at JP Morgan Chase, Goldman Sachs, and look if net interest income is a kind of any kind of comparable, what other things, what gross profit is. It is not.
Yeah. Save them time. You can tell them what the answer is.
Agree with the, sorry, Gary.
Oh, I was going to say I was going to agree with the staff. I think.
But there's no.
Well, you asked for comments. My comment is I agree with you. But when I stepping out of this thing, what I would suggest try to get through this section or the next section really. And sort of parking lot some of the other discussions in the last hour and just see, have we gone far enough? So my concern would be here is we're trying to force fit into one format, you know, very different companies. And maybe in time you can get there. The question is, how much time do you want to put into this? While we're here, I took a research, you know, the S&P 500 financial sector companies are 15% of it as of March 31. So I would say 85% of it are not predominantly financial services companies. Now, that's probably not dealing with conglomerates that got financial service subsidiaries, but I think where we are will cover an awful lot of the world if we in there. I really have some doubts about if we try to make this all the way through everybody, I think we're going to be at this for a very, very long time. And I suspect if we haven't made the official decision, I think our sense is, you know, probably insurance companies should be put to the side, let them deal with 17. Maybe we pick that up later on. Well, if you're an insurance, if you're a bank, say, well, why do they get something? I'm as different from an industrial as an insurance company is. And I think we start getting a lot of that's going to come into play. I think, you know, maybe you know, in terms of reporting formats, there's half a dozen out there, as we saw in our first paper today, maybe even more. And if you get it down to two, maybe that by itself is a remarkable improvement, you know, as opposed to one set of comparable formats that might be comparable, but they're actually probably more uniform. So I think I would focus on, in this paper, what can we do universally.
Are you then now addressing question one?
Addressing one, but I'm taking question one a little bit further, saying do we need to keep, how much further do we need to go beyond question one and even question two?
Jen Chow.
Thank you, Hans. General, I agree with staff's proposal. And as staff already mentioned, that staff will think about those proposals together with the subtotals for financial entities. I think it's very important because one of the major changes to primary financial statement, because we introduced the additional subtotals and define that, even with regard to the aggregation or disaggregation, or whether we need further line item, we should think about those information, whether fit to those subtotals. The question I agree with Sue already mentioned before, if we look at the previous examples, it seems that all those financial entities, if all those line items above the operating activities, operating profit subtotal. So below that, there is no investment category zero and other zero. So in this case, how those things fit that subtotal? And whether we, for those financial entities, need more subtotal, you know? And I think, because this is the main change, we try to apply those general, you know, the subtotals for general entities to apply for those financial entities. So I think we should think about together whether financial entities need additional subtotals or simply just fit all those, you know, disaggregation information to one subtotal. That's the operating profit. Yeah. And then think that those principles should apply for those detailed disaggregation information. So I think this is the most important thing. Yeah. Even this, if the segmental reporting information shows the previous document, shows page 5, below the operating profit, all those segmental information zero, or show that zero or very small amount. So I think we should think about this first, and then to discuss the next step. Yeah.
Tom.
I'm supportive of what the staff said. I want to put one caveat down just on question 1A1, which is the aggregation, disaggregation. And I like the first clause. I'm just not quite as comfortable that nature and function are quite so obvious as a lot of our writing suggests. And that's my big caveat. And just even listening to this discussion at FASB yesterday, when I read their description of nature and I lined it up with the stuff I've read here, they don't match all that. You know, there's some differences. So if I could just put that caveat that we'd be really cautious in moving with nature and function so that we either can define them clearly, and if we can't, we're cautious in how we employ it. But otherwise, I'm okay to follow.
Okay, can I see who agrees with question number one?
Yeah.
Okay,
but it's not,
we don't need
vote.
Sorry?
We don't
need
only comments.
Oh, no, that's very
helpful. But it's very helpful. I don't know. No, I don't think
sense
can.
The room is they do.
I'm going to refer to Hans now, and we have a big chunk of paper we were hoping still to discuss. I mean, I've found discussion so far very helpful, and I would find it very helpful to
finish this discussion before we go back and do further research, in particular because of some of the comments I've heard about some of you thinking some of the subtotals could work, such as investing, which our preliminary analysis thinks it wouldn't. Also because of the comments Gary made, even if we decide not to do anything further, we have to make a decision about how do we approach defining those entities that we don't want to do anything further. Later in the paper, we have said there are two approaches the staff has considered. One is a more of, let's say, principle-based, where the entity themselves will decide whether a particular subtotal, for example, is relevant or not, and the other approach where the board was actually define a subset of entities. Having some kind of preliminary discussions without any decisions on this, I would find really helpful before we come back a bit further. So with that, Hans, I mean, I'll let you decide. You want to give us more time or defer?
No, we can do a little bit more.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, so moving on to the second part of the paper. Fine. So the second part is trying to, it makes certain assumptions, and I have to recognize that you might disagree with those assumptions. So in our discussion, I'm going to ask you to consider alternative approaches, but also consider our assumptions. And maybe I should explain our assumptions with this. So when we did our analysis of which proposals could work and which proposals could not work, our primary anchor was what was the objective of the boards making a particular proposal. And then we assessed whether this objective would provide relevant information for financial entities. And I'm just going to run briefly why we thought for these three areas, which is the two subtotals and proposal for statement of cash flows, we didn't think the objective would provide relevant information for financial entities. So with EBIT, the objective was to define a more comparable subtotal, and the EBIT was proposed because it's commonly used. We have seen from the examples in the slide that it is not commonly used. A metric for non-financial entities. So in that sense, it was almost like a no-brainer. If our criteria is as commonly used today, then it does not meet this criteria. And then second comment is, you know, the whole philosophy behind the financing category is that it is providing information about financing of the main activity. And for financial entities, financing is the main activity and therefore, again, wouldn't meet such objective. And I will just maybe briefly talk about investing as well, although we have separate questions on those. With investing, I mean, it is true that many, if not all, financial entities have investing activities, and as you can say, well, actually, if your activity is to invest, you just put it in this investing section and proposals could work. However, the way we approached our analysis is go back with the board's objective of investing category. The objective of having investing income and expenses from investments was to separate things that users would analyze separately from the main activities of the entity. In other words, investing is not main activity of the entity. If we take this as an objective for financial entities, many of them investing is the main activity. So unless we go and change the objective, I think even though they are investments by their nature, because they are main activity, they don't follow in with this philosophy, which is why it ended up in this second part of the paper and not first. And the statement of cash flows is, is just a consequence of these two not working because decisions relate to the previous, to the subtotals. Now, I'm not going to run through the various approaches in detail, but I'm just going to highlight our overall thinking. So back to what the comment I made previous with the approaches, I think we have a matrix because first we can decide what we do first, but there are two aspects. One aspect is decide how do we determine whoever this a new different approach shall apply to, back to my comment previously, do we define entities or do we make it some kind of relevance-based assessment? And then the second aspect is actually what is this alternative approach? which can be simply not require them to present a particular subtotal, or can be to make certain exceptions, either by board-defining exceptions or basically enable them to pull out. Now, there was a lot more I wanted to say about explaining this, but in interest of time, I think I will stop here and, you know, perhaps hear your comments, and we can start with EBIT, or we can discuss them all together, perhaps EBIT and investing in interest of time.
Daryl?
So earlier on, when I mentioned scope, I think this was one of the issues that I'd been thinking about, is that perhaps we don't want to be defining scope as financial institutions versus non-financial institutions. We need to be defining scope by whether or not investing and or financing activities are the primary part of what those entities do. Because the explanation for why we think EBIT wouldn't work in certain circumstances is around that nature of the function, rather than necessarily the definition of the entity itself. To get a little bit into the detail, so I probably agreed with your paragraph 53 conclusion that EBIT does not work for these types of entities in many circumstances for exactly the reason you've given. My initial response to the what you listed in paragraph 56 in terms of your four options was immediately to go straight to the bottom option, because I felt that we were really going to struggle with the first three. But I think given that we may move to an idea that a financial institution is not a bank, but something that either has investing or interest activities as its primary or core part of its business, I think we may end up using that, getting us into something like the A option. So essentially saying that if my primary activity is financing, then financing moves out of the definition of I. If my primary activity is financing and investing, then both of those move out of I. But if it's one or the other, then I can consider it that way. It does feel like a hard outcome, though, and I think I'm probably still leaning on that one towards the D option here.
So did you say B or D?
D.
B.
D for Darrell.
Yes.
D for Darrell.
Sue?
I don't know what the answer is on this. So it's such a difficult thing. It certainly feels wrong to impose on banks, thinking of banks in particular, an EBIT subtotal when we know that it's sort of a nonsensical subtotal and not used in the market. So that doesn't seem like the right outcome. And my heart sort of agrees with what Mary and Daryl have been saying in terms of this notion of your predominant activities or whatever you want to use it. But firstly, we're going to have, I think, major issues working. I feel like we're sort of saying the reverse of what we've said through the entire project. So we started off sort of thinking about operating and, in a sense, decided that we couldn't focus on operating because it was too hard to... Well, nobody had a consistent idea of what it is that should be put into that operating section. And... so I guess in terms of thinking, I'd be interested if you come back with something along these lines. What's different now that means that we suddenly think that we can sort of positively focus on what should be up the top as opposed to focusing on the investment and the financing below? Because I feel like the reason why we went with that structure below, which worked neatly for EBIT, was because it meant that we didn't have to start talking about what was your core business, blah, blah, blah. Now, we're using different words, but it feels like a similar thing. And I'll also be interested to, we said that coming up with thresholds for disaggregation was too complicated, and I can't see that coming up with metrics that would help support deciding whether you've got a predominant activity or whatever we're going to use to decide whether or not you should have the investing and the financing up the top or down the bottom, how much easier that's going to be. So in my heart, I've got sympathy, but I'm not sure why now we think these things would be easier than they were in the past.
And Sue, I agree with that, and I just want to add one thing. So I agree with you about the intuitively it's hard to ask people to do EBIT if we think it's not a used metric. But I think it actually goes further than that. I think what you end up with is if you end up with an EBIT split in an organization whose primary stock in trade is cash, then essentially what you're going to end up doing is distort the actual key metrics, which are things like interest income and expense.
I don't disagree with you at all. I'm just not sure about what logic we're going to be able to use to then tell people to put those numbers up the top? That's my only question. Is how do we then give the people, how do we work out who needs a steer
perhaps
to do something
by
different?
Not trying to be too precise and accepting that for most banks, they know that they are banks. Most 95% of, or 99% of financial institutions will know that they are a financial institution and leave it up to them. And then perhaps we get 5% wrong, but...
And I think there could still well be a place for an investing type of category for a lot of banks. There'll be some bits of their business which they may think should be in the investing piece, and so we need to think about how that should be articulated for them that's going to work in the context of what we've done for others.
Do you have a principle in mind for that investing for banks?
Well, I think it is the sort of things that Daryl and Mary are saying. I don't know how we articulate them, but I think it is to do with what do you think is sort of part of your main business versus not part of your main business. It's sort of core, non-core type thing. But I think at a minimum for the banks, what it would be good to do would be to maybe talk a bit about, at least make sure that it's visible what they're doing with particular things, and the sorts of things I can think of off the top of my head are where in the income statement would I look to find the P&L effects of your liquidity books, your trading books, where are they sitting? And what are you doing with things that are measured at fair value in terms of splitting into pieces, and where are those pieces? Because I think at a minimum, because the banks are going to be tricky, going for further visibility so people can move things around if they disagree with where things have been put would assist making comparisons and analysis. Because in a sense, if things are visible, even if we've got something a bit woolly by necessity, because that's the best that we can do in terms of either saying you decide whether you're in this category and some general concept about what your main business is or whatever the words are we use, there's going to be big judgments people are going to have to make. But at least if you can tell from the notes or somewhere where things have been put, if you disagree with those judgments or people of similar businesses have made different judgments, you've got some chance of making comparisons and knowing what to compare.
Nick?
Thank you. So I broadly agree with the staff conclusions on these issues. I mean, I think cash flow is an excellent example where it doesn't actually help analysing a bank at all. People really struggle with that. But I think there's some higher level takeaways from our discussion, and I think it has illustrated that there is an opportunity here for us to do some good work, but it's a substantial undertaking. And I think there's a strategic decision, going back to what Francois said earlier on. We've done a lot of good work already. How do we ensure that doesn't stall those endeavours? So I think we need to think about how we position this. I think also aligned with that, we've done a lot of user outreach in what we've done so far. I think there's a separate piece of user outreach to do around financials. In terms of defining what those key metrics are, let's go and ask the users what they think they are, so we have that information to hand as well. And the final thing, really, just to pick up on what Gary said, I think, really quite early on in our discussion, let's see if we can size the conglomerate problem so we don't spend all our time and resource discussing conglomerates if it's a relatively small issue. I'm not ignoring it, but let's just be proportionate in terms of our debates here.
I'm wondering if we can start in our further analysis following the logic that we've used in our non-financial sector. So that would be the bottom-up approach, rather than changing our approach when we've invested so much in the bottom-up approach. I mean, it would mean that some entities will say it's the bottom category, financing, because it needs to be up the top. And remember, our first subtotal is business profit. So for them, that is part of getting to business profit. It may mean in the investing category there's some things there, but other things have gone up the top.
Mm-hmm.
So I would ask whether that's a way for us to start, rather than feels like going back to the drawing board and coming at it a different way.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with Sue then that disaggregation will be very important in there so people can move things around.
Can I just quickly react to this top-down and bottom-up? And I completely recognise what you raised, that we seem to have a worse approach compared to non-financial entities. But
I think that makes sense at the same time, because for non-financial entities, we have EBIT everywhere today. So it is easy for them to define what is financing, and they're doing it today. So it seemed like a logical place to start building our approach. For banks, it's the opposite. They don't do that. And therefore, us trying to follow the same logic would be inconsistent with how practice does it today. So what we are doing, because what this project is doing, we are not trying to revolutionize presentation. We are simply looking for good things that are happening today and bringing more, improving transparency, improving comparability, providing better quality information. So I think with that approach, I think actually makes sense, and I don't think we're being inconsistent. We're actually being consistent in that we are following what's happening for these different companies. And going back to Nick's point that they are not directly comparable in that sense anyway. And, by following what's happening, we are just building our approach based on that.
My only point on the consistency was when we started talking about the business profit, we didn't think we could articulate that. But now we seem to be implying we could articulate it in some way for banks. That's my only point. I agree with you in terms of the relevance and all of that side of it, and why it makes sense to think about it maybe in reverse for banks. But my only point was the definition problem. I don't see why the definition issue is suddenly simpler.
Martin? Yeah, I, like Darlene, also to this answer, please, you should not try to get any EBIT subtotal for banks, because I think investment activities is core, and you cannot define what is core, what is non-core. And same is for financing. Therefore, I think we should not go. Alternatively, clearly we can do a lot of good work, and maybe what Nick have said, okay, what are the key matrix analysts wants for banks, and really to have some kind of harmonized net interest income would kind be a kind what maybe many people would like, but is a lot of work. I would only can do that. It would be beneficial, but is that really the scope of this project? To make more guidance for financial institutions, I don't know. But if we would do, we can have people said, what is trading income, how funding is allocated to that, how when you do hedge accounting, how the interest is allocated to net interest, all these kind of questions. You can try to standardize and then make it more comparable, but it is a lot of work.
Thank you. We should not establish a model depending on who you are, but rather we should look at the nature of the business itself. So if we establish the model based on who you are, we have to define subset of the entities, and that I don't think we can do that. And then what we can do is we have to think about the conglomerate first, rather than thinking about the financial institutions especially. I understand what the Martin said, that the net interest margin and the gross profit is different. I accept that. However, if you look at the gross profit of retailer and the gross profit of manufacturer, they are completely different. And looking back my previous work, in my company, there are mining retailers and also real estate and the financials, everything. So they are completely different nature of gross profit. But having a single platform is really necessary to evaluate the performance of these. And it is not very difficult. So we have a business profit or some gross profit. Those are the profit other than general expenses. So they can be a single platform. So in this sense, we are going to require EBIT. That could be a problem, but they can exercise the judgment based on their business. So in this sense, for your question, I think we should go to A, but we should not define who you are, but it depends on the nature of the business, and the judgment should be made by the management.
John?
Just a couple of things. One of the things Sue threw out, and I'll just throw it out again as a possibility, is the idea of regulatory capital. And I did a bit of looking at banks' financial statements. And the income statement, you're right, you don't see anybody attempting to do an EBIT. But if you go to the cash flow statement and you look at what they call financing, you see some regularity and you see some differences. Some banks take everything that pays interest and they shove it in financing. Others, in the financing, takes pretty closely to regulatory capital. Right, so they, in that regard, they seem to know what financing is. At least, again, there's dispute among banks. And you know, and so they, what they, those ones, they put in the preferred stock, they put in the COCOs, they put in some subordinated debt, and they put in the common equity. And the financing describes those changes. So it's still, that's a possibility that we haven't really fully investigated at this point. I'm conscious, though, that on the income statement they don't do it, and I think with some good reason. I'm not saying that's a definitive, but it's a suggestion. The other thing that's coming down the pipe that I'm not quite sure how it's going to impact on all this is when we do FICE, some things like some preferred dividends are now going to be expenses. And so do they become operating? You know, like, because if we get some funny things that aren't plain interest, we'll start running into, again, some contradictions potentially. So I'm sympathetic to what everyone said, but I'm not sure that I'm convinced we have all the information for a definitive decision. And I wouldn't mind just a little census on how many people adopt the regulatory capital and the financing of the CFO. I suspect it's a majority.
Good job.
Thank you, Hans. As Daryl said, I agree with that. We should look at the nature of the transactions activities first, and then look at those items whether fit to the subtotals we already decide. So with regard to the detailed questions, if it's a subtotal, it's relevant to the financial category. The investment subtotal, it's relevant. The income and expenses from the investment is relevant to the investment subtotal. I agree with the staff's analysis, start from the definition or the principle we already decided, and then analyze whether it fits to what we have decided or not. So based on this logic, my point is that I think we should not require financial entity to present an EBIT subtotal, and also we should not require those financial entity to present income and expenses from investment categories, because currently the practice, they didn't do that. I think if we require them to do, whether we needed to make adjustments or to change our decision we already made, and also, as Nick said, maybe we are not providing useful information to users. So the left, what's the left? That is the business profit subtotal for the financial entities. So if we would like to, you know, financial entities provide more useful information, whether we should look at that subtotal and whether we needed to define that, because currently we're using, as Sue said, default approach. So whether we should define that and provide principles, and then whether we should require financial entity to discredit those, you know, line items which are included in the business profit. Yeah.
I think I'm more where Daryl is. First, I'd say I think we should not require a financial entity to present an EBIT, because to me, EBIT is specific to an entity for which the sale of goods and services is its primary business. Going back to what Sue said before about how we arrived at that definition by deducting, you know, by identifying and deducting out things that were the interest and that were the financing and investing. I think it would be confusing in the wrong way to go to have different definitions of EBIT depending upon which sector you are, or for us to say I means this if you're this kind of company and I means that. So that, to me, knocks out A and B of the approaches that you described. When I was thinking about what Anne said, I think my first reaction is pretty strong disagreement, because I think Anne is suggesting that we say the concept behind the work we've done to come to an EBIT is that you start with a business profit measure. And what we're saying is, and what Anne was suggesting, is that we think about how you adapt to describe what your business profit is if you are a financial entity. And I think that that really opens up the biggest version of the can of worms that Sue said in terms of how do we define what type of entities and what is your core and non-core business. I think it would be cleaner for us to say the work that we've done, including the requirement to present an EBIT type number and the definition of what goes there, works if you're predominant, I'm using words loosely, predominant business is sale of goods and services, provision of goods and services. If your predominant activities are financing and or investing, then you're not subject to that. And then we can think separately about how much more we say if you conclude that you're one of the entities where for which financing and or investing is your predominant activity, and whether or not we try and identify any key performance metric that we require such entities to present. But I think trying to adapt EBIT or trying to adapt what we have called business profit, but I think of it as more and more about as results from sale of goods and services will undermine the comparability that we have achieved by saying we're going to describe what EBIT type number is and what what's in it and out of it. And so I think the question I have for the staff in response to your question 2B, alternative approaches, is if financing was your predominant activity, would we need to define financing differently than we defined it for purposes of entities for which sale of goods and services is predominant? That I don't know. I have no idea what the answer is. Would it be very different? Just the definition of what that activity is. And then to Sue's list, which I thought was very good, about the minimum we should do if you're not applying the format that we developed so far, is be specific about where you presented, and she enumerated three items. I have a fourth I want to ask about identifying where it is, and that's hedging activities and whether you're including those in your reporting of interest or whether you're reporting them separately. And it may differ based on whether you define hedging activities based on those that qualify for hedge accounting or all the activities that you consider to be hedging. Are they investing or are they part of financing? So that's just the fourth item I put on that list, and I support getting that far and maybe not further with banks.
When I hear the discussion this far, it's pretty clear that everybody agrees we need a separate presentation. We cannot try to fix the discussions we've reached this far for non-financial companies. We cannot just simply apply them to financial institutions. I think also most board members think it will be worthwhile to do more work for financial institutions, but it's also clear that it's a lot of work. You have already a list of which grows by the board member that speaks. Shouldn't the decision be, as indicated by Martin and Nick, is this something that we are going to try to do now in this project, or is it something that we park so that we can proceed with what we have achieved thus far for non-financial institutions? That's a later question of yours, is do you want us to proceed with working on this? And I would guess that most of the board would think that that could be useful, but the timing is a big issue here. And perhaps we don't need to answer that now, but you can, you know, you have taken, you're taking inventory of the comments that are that have been made here. And if we decide that we would leave that for later, which I think would probably be the best solution, then we still have to find a cutoff. So we have to do something in the sense of defining who are not in scope for now. I think that, you know, you can make that as difficult as you want, but I think, as I said before, I think most insurance companies know that they're insurance companies. I mean, we should be able to solve that if we try to be not too precise, although everything is difficult in accounting. But well, let's just finish this round. But I think that you know this is something we have to decide at the next meeting. Daryl.
I think maybe the last point you made is quite important here. I'm not sure the solution is so difficult as the scoping of the solution. And so I think we might, if we were able to find, even if it is, as you say, a rough and ready scope, I think we could probably solve the problem or solve at least a part of the problem quite quickly after that. I just wanted to pick up a few bits and pieces. Conglomerates, I'd just be slightly nervous about going down that route until we actually have a better understanding of what we think the solution is likely to look like. And that's because I think conglomerates differ between either saying you have an insurance operation and a TV manufacturing operation, which is clearly a big difference because one's regulated and one's not, et cetera. Or you might simply be a retailer with an internal financing operation, and that financing operation looks quite a lot like two different operations that might fall under this. So I would prefer, and I think this is where Nick got to too, I prefer to focus on the two endpoints. And then once we've got an understanding of the endpoints, we can figure out how you deal with the bits in between. The other point, just picking up, I think on something Gary said earlier.
Daryl, if I may, that your approach, which makes sense, but would make it impossible to do one and do the other later. Because you will not be able to find a
And I think what it comes down to is if I look at, for example, some of the big motor car companies, a significant part, sometimes almost half of their profits, actually come from the financing side of the business, not from the sale of cars. So what is that? So I think...
And that is going to be the most difficult part of trying to find a cutoff to decide what to do now and what to do later.
The other point that I would make is just around, a comment I think Gary made earlier, and I don't know if I understood entirely, Tom, the comment you made right at the end when you were talking about regulatory. But again, caution about looking at regulatory income statements. In my jurisdiction, the regulatory income statement and the IFRS income statement are identical. But that's not because anybody's copying the regulatory. It's because they both had the same source, this IS30.
I don't think that was what Tom
was
suggesting.
That's not what I... No, what all I was saying is this... And I just... I'll come back a little bit on Mary's point. I think she said... I don't know what the question you asked said was, does it need to be defined differently or something for financial entities? And I would say... You said you don't... I'm convinced that, yes, it would have to be. I've accepted as we've gone through, this is just a short preamble, that I'm happy with the approach of building finance investing, because I think fundamentally you want to split operating out from certainly financing. And that was a fine way to get there, and so no point quibbling. But fundamentally when you go to financial institutions, they get intermixed, and almost you probably need to define operating, and then the other might become the residual. And that's, I think, where we run into a lot of problems. Just so to answer the question, when I look around for how do I basically split operating from financing, is there anything like financing? What I've concluded, if there's anything at all, I need to probably look at regulatory capital. And I'm not saying a regulatory income statement. I'm merely saying items that could qualify as financing, I would look at regulatory capital to think about what they would be. So preferred stock.
that, you know, might be an expense or a COCO or whatever. And that's just in defining which instruments, so clearly not deposits. And so I'm saying that's a way one might look at it. And that's when I went and looked at some, how do some of the entities build their cash flow statements and so on, and some adopt something that looks kind of like identifying those items. You know, I'm not saying it's a solution. It's just something I would feel more comfortable we fully explore when we do financial. And since I'm just, I totally agree with Hans. What he said is if we do financial, it's going to, well, it'll be hard. And so I'm back to wanting to do what we're seem to be doing quite well at this stage. And I'll support Daryl's caveat, though. I think when we go to do that, we're going to have to think about the retailer with a big financing credit card in. So we're going to have to do something with them, or else we'll be scoping out so bloody much. Sorry, bad word. So much that I'm not sure we'll have a really good thing.
I would suggest a few issues. First of all, I think personally I would want to keep our set of requirements applying to everyone.
You would?
To everyone.
You would or wouldn't?
I would. And see within that set of requirements having eventually different types, different criteria that lead to subsets of requirements. When I look at the structure and what we've done to date, I think the business profit line that we have and the profit before tax that we have can apply to everyone. Mm. So basically what we are facing is not only the EBIT, but it's also the investing category. Are these two elements that are causing problem? So that's why I feel that when we discuss this with, for example, banks in mind, I think we're forgetting all sorts of circumstances that also have to be accommodated. And for that reason, I think we really need to make a supplementary effort to keep our bottom-up approach, but probably on one hand refine our definitions. They may be eventually strengthened so that they exclude more circumstances and introduce a business activity criterion in our requirements so that we direct people to different subtotals depending on their circumstances. And, of course, with all the disclosures around that. Having said that, so I said business profit, I said profit before tax, but we also have the GVs decision that we've made that also can apply to everyone who is concerned with GVs and associates. Now, the point that I was... and. That I think is a bit of work we can try and see whether everyone would be able to get to the proper format with just applying a set of requirements that would be in a way too simple based. Now I think with the definition that we've made so far and the way we have defined EBIT more particularly, we have included in EBIT two elements at least that in fact apply generally. The finance expense that arises from discounting, for example, on IAS 37 provisions, the one that stems from employee benefits. So we have these elements that are not elements that differ with different business activities. So if we go that route, we have to take care of why and how we would have, and if we maintain that, why and how we would have different presentations, different location in the financial statements for the same elements for different activities when those elements are not related to the business activities. These are the difficulties that I see. But they're not that big difficulties, frankly. So,
Gary?
Yeah. Hans, I agree with your position, which I think was option D here on page 16, which is to not require financial service entities to have an EBIT. But I think your question went a little bit further about just how far do we go, if at all, with having financial services companies even in the scope. and I'm largely where you are on it. I do think, just quickly, for companies that got captive financing, you know, whether it's credit cards, leasing, auto finance, I think they belong in scope. Other parts of conglomerates, yes, we'll have to do some research and figure out how far do you go on it. Whether, if we ever ended up with financial institutions in scope, I mean, I personally believe the upper part of this thing, the business profit, operating profit, but I think your main activities need to be captured in there. Companies know what their main activities are, whether we try to call it core business model, EBIT, you know, operating profit. Companies know what they're in business to do, and is this really a management approach? You know, give some really broad principles about what goes above versus not, but, you know, maybe we're not going to even get there, you know, for financial services companies. And I think, I know, comparability is a huge issue for us here, but even for commercial industrial companies that are non-financial service companies, companies are all different. When we had our consultative groups in last week, I was talking to somebody who's in the media business, and he goes, well, media, and there's no comparability in there. There's one thing you sell a streaming service or a broadband, but other companies own production facilities, you own landlines, you've got TV stations, other distributions. They're very different with themselves. Even within banking, I'm not talking diversified financial, I'm talking banking. You've got your money center banks, which is heavily into M&A and underwriting. You've got your retail banks, you've got community banks, you've got wealth management, you've got merchant banks. There's not a lot of comparability in what they do in there themselves. I think we've got to be careful about how far we go with comparability. This is a presentation and display project, not a recognition measurement, where I think comparability is much more important.
Sue?
Okay, so listening to all of this, I think there would be sort of, in my mind, three broad approaches that we could take. One would be to scope out whatever they are, banks, financial institutions, out of the whole EBIT discussion and just focus on some sort of improved disaggregation, like I talked about before, which I think would be the lightest touch. I think the second approach would be along the lines that Francoise articulated, I think, which would be to try and keep those basic ideas, and similar to Anne as well, the basic ideas that we had for our EBIT, and with the investing separate in the EBIT, but to for banks to have another criteria added to the investing and the financing, to say that you use the investing and financing ideas we came up with except if they're part of your, whatever it is, core businessy type concept. But I'd only introduce that complication of core business for that scope, because I think we don't need to worry about that for all of the other more vanilla entities. So it would be building on what we've got. I think the consequence of that might be that for a really basic banking operation, a traditional, you know, deposit-taking lending bank, even though we've said we're using the basic EBIT structure, they'd end up with everything up the top part, up in the sort of business profit, and they could then have a NIM subtotal up there, and so they'd end up back where they are, but we wouldn't have disrupted our entire model. And if they've got a few other things going on, like some investments, or they've got reg capital, which they don't think is part of their core, on Tom's thinking, they might end up with some stuff, you know, using the normal structure, but most of it up the top, and so it would be have some level of flexibility. And I guess the third thing to do would be to do something far more dramatic, which would be to scope the banks and out of the EBIT approach and to develop something specific for them along NIM or something like that. That would be the third broad alternative. And I personally wouldn't go for that because I think that's a big project in its own right. But I think there could be some credibility in that second approach, which I think is similar to, it's like what Francoise and I think Anne articulated. I don't think it's that far off what Daryl and Mary were sort of shooting for.
That also solved the conglomerate problem.
Yeah. Yes.
I think it could.
Because you're principle-based.
And on scope, I think it's going to be tricky. And one thing we need to think about, I think, when we think about scope is that there's a whole spectrum of banks as well. So for some of the investment banks, they've got a lot of fee income and trading income. The whole NIM discussion is probably not so relevant, and then we've got quite a broad church even within that, so we need to keep that in mind still, I think.
That sort of approach is saying let's get some principles and people will move around them, so it's allowing some flexibility.
Martin's going to explain why that doesn't work.
Yeah.
No, but we can go this route, but then we have end up with this same route as we have forced banks to do this cash flow statement, which banks are doing. We have pressed them into, but it's meaningless for everybody.
It's
meaningless for everybody. And what Tom has said, because many banks have allocated this kind of regulatory stuff into the financing, because they are forced into doing that. But let's assume you have an EBIT number. Some bank has this interest from regulatory financing, excluding from that compared to the bank which don't have any regulatory interest.
But excuse me, Matt.
Then, okay, that is a meaningless number, which is misleading.
I didn't say that.
But
I said we have an idea of operating, which some banks might think they would want to include reg capital.
Yeah, but I think really, it is artificial to think a bank, okay, to divide what is investing, what is core business, what is not, what is financing, what is core, what is not.
If you
exclude things, you come up with numbers investors, and that is, I think, also the paper said, nobody from the analyst is using EBIT for a bank. That was in this paper. And why should we, when cost-benefit analysis, why should we force banks to do that?
If we go down the central
I'm expecting
approach.
Banks to end up with no difference in a lot of cases between their operating profit number
yeah, but
and
that
the
is
EBIT
my point.
Number.
We're doing that without not any benefit. We're asking people to do work without any benefit.
With all due respect, I don't agree, because you might have a bank that's got a core deposit-taking lending business, and then they've got a couple of core investments which are quite separate. And I would have thought that if an investor was valuing that business, they might want to think differently about those investments from their core business. And if we went with this approach, we would get that disaggregation in that type of situation. But if all you're doing is a banking business, then everything could be up the top.
Yeah, but what is when a banking business, what is then core investment, what is not? Man, if you have a liquidity portfolio which you invest in a security or another investment, why is that one core, other is not core? I mean, that is
another
my
alternative,
problem.
Which is just
this is artificial to divide, and that is my main point. It is artificial to divide in this kind of business, financing and investing, what is then core and what is not core. That is my problem. And we have the same problem we have with the cash flow statements. This is the same problem which we have. And banks doing that, but they're doing that with cost and not any benefit. Not any benefit. I have not heard any investor analyst who think, okay, this cash flow statement from banks has any benefit. And if we're doing that, we will have the same. We haven't We're forcing banks to come up with artificial splitting of EBIT. Maybe there is some interest then from defined benefit plans, which is not material for banks in the overall interest income. We can all do that. But what is the benefit? For whom? For nobody. Nobody has any benefit for that.
Nick?
Just to reiterate what I said earlier, I think it's absolutely essential that we understand investor needs in this space before we commit to one of these three routes. I think I don't want us producing something that then everyone just shrugs their shoulders. That doesn't help me.
But if that's going to take too long, I think we'd be better thinking about just scoping it out and focusing on disaggregation.
I don't disagree with that.
Hans, in terms of Sue's three alternatives, when I diligently note them down, I think I'd cast them into two. One is to keep the basic idea for EBIT and adapt it for financial institutions. That was your second one, Sue.
Mm-hmm.
And the first and third both start with the same thing, which is scope financial institutions out of EBIT. And so I think it's either scope them out of EBIT or adapt EBIT for them.
Yeah.
And I think if we say scope it out, maybe our decision about whether to go scope out or not will depend on whether we say scope it out and do nothing, specify disaggregation, or try and build a full working model. And do we have two as a marker for doing three? But I think that's a decision. And I think the point that you raised only in connection with keep the basic ideas but adapt it, do we have to develop some additional criteria only for the scoping applies to either route? Because if we're going to scope them out, you have to have a basis for scoping out. So I come down to, staff come back with a proposal to either keep them in and, with adapting. I've heard nobody say keep them in and don't adapt. So keep them in, adapt, or scope them out. Do we need additional criteria for scoping them out? And if we do scope them out, in this phase, how much will we do? Nothing, minimum disaggregation, or bells and whistles.
Okay, this is a very adequate summary of where we stand.
Can I
sorry.
Could you summarise?
I could, but it might take 20 minutes. I don't think Hans would be happy with that. We came here today for direction, and I think we achieved, actually, what we came here for. So thank you very much for this discussion. And I will kind of, we still have to discuss with the team and the strategy, but I will just indulge maybe and say what is my takeaway and how we're going to proceed with the next steps. And, you know, taking the point that there's a lot of research that could be done, it could take a lot of time, and we need to be careful. But what I took away, that it is still useful to, as put Nick's words, scope the problem, or in other words, understand better, you know. Thanks, Amara, for initial research. And, you know, back to Hal's point yesterday or the other day, what are actually these entities, and to have a better understanding, you know, how many conglomerates and this and that. So I would suggest that we as a staff continue working on that aspect of just understanding better the IFRS preparers in this category. In terms of going forward, I mean, there are various options, as you have discussed, but I heard there's a clear message that we really want to focus on refining and making good things that can work across the spectrum rather than focusing now on going to specificity that would maybe be relevant for a subset. And with that, my takeaway is really focus on disaggregation and see whether our approach and the further work we are doing make sure that it can be applicable and test that it is applicable across the spectrum. And with that, kind of my nugget of concern, and back to the point you made earlier, Tom, about this nature and function, and, you know, how useful is that in some instances? Can you even say what it is, and, you know, relationship to fair value changes and things are things we might need to consider. As I said, we will still discuss as a team exactly where to focus next. Managing performance measures, I think, in equal respect, I took away the message that they can apply. With the other areas, and back to the options that we have discussed, my takeaway is actually don't spend. So there are a number of things we could be doing, but don't actually spend significant effort or even maybe not prioritize now the specific consideration for these entities, but rather almost take assumption of going with D, although we're not necessarily maybe going to ask you that immediately until we progress more, but basically focus on these things that work. And I think Nick's point is very important, and I took away as a strong signal that we really ought to focus on investor outreach with specific investors that have specific focus on financial entities and all kinds of financial entities that we have in the paper, just to better understand, are there any, you know, low-hanging fruit opportunities that perhaps we have missed to address in this project that we could do? So with that, I mean,
I'm not sure that I said I didn't want an EBIT subtitle, if that's what you said in your summary.
Well, it's not a decision-making. I guess what I was communicating is we as a team, we need to decide how we prioritize work, and we have kind of, you know, limited resources, and what are we going to do next? So this is kind of my, you know, focus next on the common areas and focus next on understanding better from investors in financial entities of all sorts, where is the useful, and maybe back to address some of Martin's concerns that we actually, when we go, I'm not saying we're not going to go back through and say, let's consider these three approaches where we would tinker with, you know, our approach to investing. But I think before we can ask you to make the decision, we need to present you with the evidence of how useful we think you know, the result of that might be or might not be. And I can't sit here with a straight face and tell you I know the answer to that question now. So that is just what I was trying to say. But, yeah.
I think the board have indicated we're quite keen to look at that. So I think that would be something we'd want to be explored when you're talking to investors.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what I was... Yeah. That's... Yeah.
Okay. Well, we went well over time, but that's... It's an important issue topic, so no problem. We reconvene at 11:45 for insurance, so it's an hour later.